Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Sox Maniacs Podcast.
Welcome to the Red Sox Maniacs Podcast, live edition. I'm Brandon Terrell. I'm coming to you live from Augusta, Maine. I have with me here tonight on the line, Deacon Art from Orono. Deacon?
Good evening, Brandon.
And I also have Barry Terrell coming to you live from Machias. Barry?
Hello, fellow Maniacs.
And finally, Cousin Jason coming to you live from Pittsfield. Jason out there?
I am right here, and God, can I just say, Steve Lyons is by far the worst announcer that Nesson has ever employed.
Thankfully, I'm in the garage, and I get the radio on, and I can listen to Joe Castiglione pronounce San Leon.
Diggy.
All right, fellas. First up, we're going to dive right into a little Maniacs roundtable. How it'll work, I'll pose a question to one of you guys, and then we'll just bat it around the round table until the topic exhausts itself. So, Deacon Art, you're going to be up first. The big news out of Red Sox Nation this week, Justin Masterson is out as a starter. He's placed on the DL, and Steven Wright is in for the start on Sunday. Did the Red Sox make the right call here, choosing Steven Wright to join the rotation at this time, or should they have gone with one of the young lefties from AAA, Eduardo Rodriguez or Brian Johnson?
Well, I think the choice they've actually made is to have Steven Wright join the rotation for this one start. He's made, even though he hasn't pitched a lot in the big leagues, he's pitched around, I think the number was 8 2/3 innings against Seattle in his career, and they've been shutout innings. Seattle hasn't scored on him. So I think they were looking to do two things, get Masterson out of the rotation and have Wright pitch at least this one game. Now, if he has a really good start Sunday, I think, you know, they'll maybe give him another opportunity. But I think the guy really to look at is Rodriguez. Apparently, he pitched, I think it was Wednesday for the Paw Sox, who wouldn't have lined him up to pitch this coming Sunday. But with an off day coming up on Monday, his next turn in the rotation, he would be lined up to take that start. So I think it's a one-game audition for Steven Wright. With an outstanding performance, he could keep the job, but I'm not sure he has joined the rotation, quote-unquote.
Think he's one and done?
I would agree with Deacon, with the only exception being that with a knuckleballer, you never know. I mean, he could catch fire. And like you said, if he has a really good start, I wouldn't see any harm in letting him make another one and let Rodriguez continue to make his starts at AAA and wait till he's ready. I think ultimately whoever takes the spot, I think getting Masterson out of the rotation, at least for the short term and probably for the long term too, is definitely the right move. He just, you know, he was a bounce back candidate for them, and it just seems like it's not there unless he can go on a rehab stint and you know, recover his stuff, which seems unlikely, but hopefully they'll catch lightning in a bottle with the knuckleballer Steven Wright, but it remains to be seen.
I would also agree with all of the things that you've said, although I would very much like to see Eddie Rodriguez get called up as soon as possible so that he can help out my fantasy baseball team in the RSM Fantasy League.
Yeah, to me, I'm hoping that it's not a long-term situation where they're kind of handing the ball to Steven Wright and say, kind of be the guy to step into this rotation spot. You know, to me, I think they need a little spark on that rotation, although they've been better lately. Buchholz is okay so far tonight. But I think Rodriguez or even Brian Johnson could be a guy to really give them a lift and give them another left-handed pitcher in the rotation. Brian Johnson had a good turn in Pawtucket last night, pitched really well down there. So are we unanimous here thinking that Rodriguez has a leg up on Brian Johnson if it's going to be one of the two?
Well, here, there's only two things that I need to mention on this. First of all is perhaps Steven Wright could catch lightning in a bottle a la Tim Wakefield in 1995 when he was fantastic when he first got to Boston with a knuckleball. That would be a tremendous boost for this Sox team. And if I remember correctly, the 95 Sox were kind of floundering around as well, and maybe Deacon Art can speak to that. And the other thing is, I really can't wait for Brian Johnson to get to Boston just because of all the AC/DC references that we can then make.
Yeah, as opposed to the Stephen Wright references?
That is true, yes. Yes.
Yeah, those references are pretty much a wash. The only thing I would add to that is I would say, obviously, Henry Owens would need to be added to the 40-man roster if he was ever going to come up, and I know he seems to have slid behind those other two guys, but I just got a gut feeling that by the end of the year, let's say August, that I feel like he's going to be pitching better than the other two, and I just still feel like he could be the one to make a good splash with this team by the end of the year. But as it stands right now, I would definitely say, you know, with Wright being the possibility of getting hot, but I would definitely say that Rodriguez would then be the first lefty to get a shot, followed by Johnson.
Hey, just a quick thing on Owens. He actually had a good start tonight at six shutout innings with only one walk, which maybe no walk, one walk or no walks, which has been his bugaboo so far. So maybe tonight was the start of a little turnaround for him.
All right, it sounds like we're pretty unanimous. We hope that, you know, Stephen Wright does well on Sunday, might earn himself another start, but if not, the next time that turn in the rotation comes around, looking like maybe Eddie Rodriguez or maybe Brian Johnson. Let's do a quick lightning round around the round table here. Here's the question. What is the future of Justin Masterson for the remainder of 2015? Is he a complete non-factor? Does he come back as a bullpen guy? Or does he come back in the rotation at some point?
I would say bullpen.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I was going to let the Deacon go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Well, I would say it's the bullpen. I'd be surprised if he makes another start this year, personally.
Yeah, I would say Masterson's out as a starter.
I would tend to agree with that. Tendonitis can really be a troublesome injury.
So, Barry, Jason, you guys thinking nothing from Masterson the rest of the way, or do you think he could be an effective bullpen guy?
I mean, he could get righties out of the bullpen. You know, he could be a long relief guy out of the bullpen. I mean, it all depends. If he's still throwing 87 miles an hour with no life on his sinker, you know, I think he's not going to help him anywhere.
Yeah, I would probably be in agreement with that as well.
All righty, next question. So the Red Sox are 6-16 on the season when their opponent scores first. And unfortunately, 22 out of their 35 games so far, the Red Sox have fallen behind. When they do get that lead, they're 11-2. They're a tough team when they're playing in front. But my question is, what's up with the lack of comeback wins? Why can't this team seem to scrap together some comeback wins? Back around to you, Art.
Well, I think it's that statistic illustrates the two things that have really been wrong with this season so far is the fact, you know, the starting pitching's been poor. So a lot of the games they can't come back because the hole's been too deep. And intertwined with that is the fact that the offense just has not been as expected yet either. So, you know, when you're putting yourself in a hole, sometimes often an early hole, and then the bats just aren't performing on top of that, you get that result that you just mentioned, Brandon.
Yeah, and then
I actually did some
research
on this.
Oh, go ahead,
Barry.
I was just going to say, on top of that, when the bullpen comes in and can't hold down the other team's offense, you know, there's been multiple games where the offense has scored enough runs to come back, but the bullpen hasn't held them down after they've come into the game. They haven't been able to do their job either. So it's really all three of those factors combined together.
Yeah. And the one thing I was going to say was I did do some research in prepping for the podcast tonight and found that the Red Sox 6-16 record when falling behind is actually slightly above the league average for all major league teams when they fall behind. Basically, if you fall behind, you win about 26% of the time, and the Sox are winning at about 27% of the time. So that's roughly in line with the league average. So I think in some ways, yes, it's a problem, but you might be grasping for a problem there a little bit, Brandon, more so than the other issues. So.
Yeah, well, that actually leads into the other thing that I wanted to say on this topic, which is, you know, the Deacon covered the key stuff. Obviously, the starting pitching is going to give up a ton of first-inning runs. That's been another factor. But to me, perhaps the bigger factor is that if you look at the Red Sox kind of golden years here from 2003 through 2013, which just happened to fall in line with a big chunk of time known as the steroid era, where big offensive outburst and putting up big innings and being able to come back all of a sudden became like second nature in Red Sox Nation. It happened all the time. It was like, hey, if we're behind, no big deal. We can always come back and win. Well, now in an era of baseball where there's practically no PEDs involved, now you fall behind and offense across the board in Major League Baseball is down. So it's obviously going to be difficult to come from behind and score more runs to be able to catch up. So, you know, I think that is, you know, a factor with just offense not being what it was, you know, during the steroid years, that if you get behind, you know, you're going to obviously decrease your chances of winning the game. And that's, you know, anytime you fall behind in any sport, you're going to decrease your chances of winning the game. I mean, that's just the way it is. So I agree with, you know, Jason's stats that, you know, Red Sox are actually slightly above the league average. You know, to me, it's partially
right
because...
Right at league average anyways.
Maybe the problem isn't then we can't, you know, generate comeback wins, but the problem is just let's not get behind from the get-go in the first place. And
we'll be
all set.
When you have the worst starting pitching ERA in pretty much all of baseball, you're going to be behind a lot.
All right, Barry, this question is for you to start with. Barry, this question is for you to start with here. I can't remember where it was. It was in one of our posts or one of our live chats early on in the season, and you talked about how, you know, confident you were in this team against left-handed pitching. Now, before last night's game, when they faced Elias, and obviously it doesn't include tonight's stats so far against Hap, the Red Sox were hitting just .188 against lefties. They were dead last in the American League. Their OPS against lefties was .638, which is abysmal. That was 13th out of 15 AO teams. And then last night, you know, again, just managed one run off of the lefty, although they did get 8 hits. So what's up with this team against left-handed pitching, Barry?
Well, I mean, I attribute part of it to Brandon. I think it was made a comment during a live chat a few weeks ago about the Red Sox kill left-handed pitching. Let's clobber this team tonight. And since then, I don't think we beat a lefty, but we don't believe in jinxes anymore. We don't believe in jinxes or curses anymore in Red Sox Nation. So, I mean, I think part of it is, well, you see, you know, with Victorino being back now, he was one of your better hitters against lefties. He was out. That might have been a factor. You know, Ortiz has been struggling. He's one of your left-handed hitters that typically hits lefties well. He's been struggling a little bit. That might be a factor. Sandoval obviously has been struggling to hit from the right side. Napoli, if you want to look at a key reason, you probably could look at Napoli and even Pedroia a little bit. That, you know, two of their better right-handed hitters Napoli's been off to a terrible start. Pedroia's off to a pretty solid start, but, you know, his stats with runners in scoring position are terrible. And I think we all got a little bit optimistic about the Red Sox against lefties on opening day, where they just shredded Cole Hamels, and it looked like they had a lineup this year, you know, that was suited to beat lefties, but I think it's still a small sample size. You know, I think once Napoli gets hot, once Poppy gets hot, and they start hitting better with runners in scoring position, they'll be better against lefties and righties. You know, I think when we look back at the end of the year, I think the Red Sox will fare okay versus left-handed pitching.
Anybody else want to jump in there?
I would agree with everything that Barry just said. Mike Napoli.
I think especially Ortiz. You know, I think Ortiz, I said tonight, was hitting something like .120 against lefties too. He's usually pretty much just as good against lefties as he's always been against righties, right in the middle of the lineup, you know, against left-handers. So he hasn't got himself on track yet so far this year. It seems like every ball he hits is right into a defensive shift, although he snuck one through there tonight. So, you know, up and down the lineup, they've been pretty disappointing. You know, and that's not even to mention the Alan Craig crap sandwich that we had to watch for a while while Victorino was out.
You know, the immediate and short answer I thought of when you asked the question, Brandon, was Mike Napoli. I think, yes, Ortiz, Sandoval batting right-handed, Pedroia, those have all been issues. But to me, the one guy that could have really, you know, turned that around so far would be a Mike Napoli who was hitting the ball the way he was in Florida. And I was glad, I think Barry mentioned the opening day versus Cole Hamels. I think in reality, their offense versus lefties will fall somewhere between that opening day performance and some of the more recent poor performances. And I suspect when it's all said and done, it'll actually tilt slightly more towards the opening day performance than the last week or two or three.
All right. Next question is for Jason to start with. You know, we mentioned Shane Victorino missed some time. We've missed his right-handed bat in the lineup. Although he is, before tonight's game, only hitting slash lines of 178, 315, 289 on the season. And really coming into this season, the talk was that Victorino is auditioning for a trade out there. We want to get rid of him as soon as we can so that we can get, you know, Rusney Castillo or whoever up and take over that right field spot. And yet, you look at the numbers when Victorino's in the lineup and when he's not. Red Sox are 10-6 this year when Victorino plays. They're 7-12 without him. In 2013, Victorino was a regular contributor. They win the World Series. 2014, he's out. They plummet to the basement. So I guess my question here, Jason, is does Red Sox Nation undervalue Shane Victorino and what he brings to this team night in and night out? Or are those win-loss numbers just kind of a coincidence?
I have mixed feelings on all this. First of all, let me just go back and say one other thing that I wanted to chime in on the left-handed pitching is overall the Red Sox are only hitting .234 as a team. So while, yes, they're putrid against left-handers, and that's probably dragging down the overall average, it's not like they're setting the world on fire from the, you know, when they face righties either. That's certainly an issue that's masked by the poor starting pitching. As far as Victorino goes, I think, you know, in some ways, yes, the fans of Boston see how poor his slash line has been. But honestly, he's pretty much been a winner wherever he's gone. I mean, the Phillies were really good in the mid to late 2000s when he was a regular contributor, you know, from 06 to 09 to actually, I guess he was traded in 2012, according to Baseball Reference. And even when, you know, he was traded to the Dodgers, they were a playoff team. And so, you know, his career line is, you know, he's a career 276 hitter. He's never hit over 300 in a season, but his teams consistently win. And there's something to be said for those guys that consistently make their teams better. However, I also could buy into it being purely coincidence that they've played better when he's there. And as a quick side note on Rusney Castillo, he did have a couple of big hits tonight, a three-run bomb and second at-bat and a double I saw on Twitter earlier, although I would also say his injury propensity is still somewhat concerning, even though they're not maybe catastrophic injuries.
Well, I would say on Victorino, I still think if he goes through about a three-week stretch where he appears to be healthy and is playing very well, I still think they're looking to move him at some point. Now, the flip side of that is if not, and he produces and helps them win, all the better. But they still have, in effect, an outfield glut. To believe that Victorino's going, I mean, even as productive and helpful as he was when they won the World Series 2 years ago, he still was hurt a lot. He missed a lot of games that year, and he forced himself in the lineup for another bunch of games. He wasn't really what you would call completely healthy that year either. His contract's up at the end of this year, so, I mean, this year is it one way or the other in Boston. And I still think, and ironically, that he hit a home run and had a good game last night, because ever since last winter, one of the teams that's been rumored to be possibly interested in him is Seattle. I think at some point it may go into July, but I think if he puts together three good healthy weeks, they'll be looking to move him still.
Yeah, I also saw coming into the series that Victorino has the highest batting average against the Mariners, with a minimum of like 40 career at bats out of anybody in the major league. So, you know, that I heard Dave O'Brien earlier on the radio broadcast speculating that same idea that Seattle might be a potential landing point. I think he mentioned that, you know, this year, after this year in the offseason when he's a free agent, he might be looking at Seattle, which would be a little bit closer to his home state of Hawaii too. But and I think the other key, you guys are right on. I agree with you about Victorino. I'd say the only other tidbit would be if he's willing to settle into or be comfortable with being a platoon player. I mean, he's so good from the right side of the plate. If he would be willing to just play against lefties and an occasional righty, you know, then he could still have a part-time role, which might also help keep him a little bit healthier. I think that's part of the reason why they kind of rushed him back from his stint in the minor leagues. His rehab assignment was because they knew they were going to face a bunch of lefties here on the West Coast against Oakland and Seattle, and they needed his right-handed bat in the lineup. You know, but, so if he was willing to commit to being a platoon player, either with Jackie Bradley Jr. or Daniel Nava as the left-handed complement, I could see that working out for a while. But the trouble you would run up against eventually would be that Theo also bats right-handed, and if you want to clear a spot for him, which obviously they want to eventually, then if Castillo comes up to play right field, he's going to play practically every day, and then you're not going to want Victorino to be a platoon guy against lefties. So I think he could find a role there as a right-handed platoon guy and a defensive replacement and a good depth player. But if he's unwilling to accept that type of role, then I certainly think that they'll be looking to trade him if he could get on a roll here, like the Deacon said, over the next 3 weeks or month or so.
Yeah, a couple of last thoughts on Victorino. You know, it's subjective and it's anecdotal, but the guy just seems to make plays almost every night. He's in there to win baseball games that kind of don't show up in the stat lines. You know, last night he had a tremendous running catch in the outfield and doubled a guy off base. Tonight he ran on the inside of the baseline to make sure that the shortstop hit him in the back instead of doubling him off of first, and then a couple batters later he comes around to score. So just those wily veteran-type plays that I think this team really needs as they also try to break in a bunch of youngsters on this team, you know, and Betts and Bogarts and Swihart. So I'm kind of in favor of, you know, as long as he's healthy, and that's a huge caveat with him, but rolling with him and his veteran know-how over trying to force another one of these young kids in Castillo in there, you know, at the major league level right now. And also,
the other thing
go ahead.
The other thing I would say in regards to that is, in looking at Victorino's career lines on his baseball reference page here, honestly, the first year in Boston, we were blessed with one of his arguably two or three best seasons of his entire career. So I think in some ways he had nowhere to go but down after, you know, that season and his heroics in the postseason with the Grand Slam. And then a couple other things that got brought up, Brandon, you mentioned the possibility of a platoon with Brock Holt, who has quietly been absolutely horrendous at the plate for the last two or three weeks. And then the other thing was, we talked about Victorino getting traded to Seattle, and I did see a report today that Gordon Eads put out that apparently the Red Sox attempted to trade Jackie Bradley Jr. to the Mariners this spring for Maine's own Charlie Furbush, that the Mariners happily declined.
And, you know, so last thing on Victorino, maybe it's not that he is especially good, but maybe he's just that much better than Alan Craig and Daniel Nava in the lineup. So moving on, I think we're going to move on to our next game of the evening. It's called the rating game, and how it's going to work is I'm going to give four items here, and then we're going to go around, and you guys are each going to have to rank them 1 to 4, okay? So the first one is going to be the pitching trade market. Okay, I'm going to give you four names, and you have to take into consideration now what they're going to cost in prospects if the Red Sox were to acquire one of these guys through a trade. You know, obviously how good they are, how much of an impact they would have on our season, you know, as well as the remaining contract and everything that goes in to that acquisition. So the four names are, number one, Cole Hamels. Number two, Johnny Cueto. Number three, Scott Kazmir. Or number four, Ubaldo Jimenez. Art, you're up.
I would say, to me, Cueto is number one. To me, he's the closest thing they could get to replicating the Pedro trade of a decade or two ago. Although he would be a rental for sure, potentially, unless they want to spend a lot of money on him. So I would say Cueto first, Kazmir second, Hamels third, and Ubaldo Jimenez fourth.
Yeah, that's. I was determined to put Hamels fourth until you threw Ubaldo Jimenez out there. Although Jimenez is pitching pretty well this year, I'm not sure that Baltimore would be willing to give up on him unless they fall way behind the pack. So, I would also say Cueto one, Kazmir two. I'll stick to my initial gut feeling. I'll put Jimenez third and Hamels fourth.
I'll say Cueto 1, and then all the other three are 4A, B, and C. I'm not sure that I want any of those other three.
All right, fair enough. Ubaldo, of course, you know, thrown in there, as Barry said, he's been dominant so far this season, and he's on a big contract that the Orioles probably don't want for much longer. He's blocking Kevin Gausman, so he could be had really cheap as an option. He's certainly cheaper than the three other guys. All right, so
well,
first rating game
but not,
down.
Not to an in-division rival. I mean, the cost goes up simply because they're in the same division, and the fact that we stole Eduardo Rodriguez from them for Indianola last year.
Right. Yeah, the rental of them. All right, next one. Reasons to blame that the Red Sox are off to a bit of a slow start here in 2015. So remember, rate them 1 to 4. Starting pitching, the bullpen, hitting with runners in scoring position, or the GM managing coaching trifecta?
I'll go ahead and start on this one. That's a tough one. It might be the toughest one yet. I've been perhaps the biggest supporter of the starting rotation here early in the year, but I'd have to put starting pitching as the first blame for a slow start, followed by hitting with runners in scoring position as 2A, 2B would be the bullpen, and then number three or four, depending on how you want to look at it, would be the general manager slash coaching of this year's team.
I would concur with that. I actually thought you listed them in a pretty good order when you gave them to us, starting pitching, the bullpen not being able to hold leads, because we've already said that we would have been able to secure, you know, 2, 3, how many ever more wins had the bullpen shut down some opponents in those middle innings, as opposed to letting, a 3-run game get turned into an 8-run game. And then certainly the offense's inability to drive home runners.
As bad as the pitching's been overall, I'm of the camp that the hitting really has been the biggest bugaboo. I'd take the hitting with runners in scoring position as my number one, probably followed by the bullpen rotation and then the management in fourth.
All right, it sounds like that's going to be all we have time for tonight. This was the first go-round here at trying the live version of the Red Sox Maniacs podcast. It's a lot of fun. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me. I'm Brandon Taro. I was here in Augusta. We had Deacon Art. We had Cousin Jason. We had Barry Taro on the line with us. I want to thank you for joining us. Anybody out there listening to it, we're going to turn this into podcast form, hopefully, and get this up archived on our website at www.redsoxmaniacs.com. So check us out there. Go Red Sox here tonight, still going on in Seattle. Gentlemen, any quick last words?
Thanks, Brandon. Thanks for setting this up, and go Red Sox.
Likewise.
I think things have turned around. I think they're starting to play a little better, and things are looking up.
All right, thanks, guys.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Good night.